Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
It's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. A pedestrian was struck and killed while reportedly attempting to cross to Interstate 205 north of Oregon City in Westland early Monday morning. Oregon State Police say the pedestrian was headed east across I-205 near exit 12A, Damascus, when he was hit by a 2019 Ford cargo van driven by 56-year-old Donald resident Stephen Stewart. The crash occurred at approximately 5:05 a.m. The pedestrian sustained fatal injuries and was pronounced dead at the scene. He has not yet been identified pending notification of his next of kin. Stewart remained on the scene following the crash and is cooperating with investigators, police say. I-205 northbound was closed for several hours while police investigated. OSP was assisted by Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, Clackamas County Fire Department, and the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Sources say an offer was made and accepted last week on the building currently housing the offices of the Canby Herald newspaper on North Grant Street in downtown Canby. However, the listing agent confirmed Monday that the offer had been terminated. No reason was given, but the property will remain on the market. If the sale had gone through, it would have been an unusually fast turnaround for downtown Canby. The listing went live July 8th, so the 2,780 square foot property owned by Pamplin Media Group had been for sale less than a week when the offer was reportedly made. According to sources with knowledge of the negotiations, the seller is insisting on a very tight closing window, which has dampened some of the early interest. The 74-year-old commercial property has been listed with broker Bill Reif of Remax Equity Group. The Herald plans to continue to occupy the building until it's sold, then rent a smaller space in town. The asking price is $375,000.
A 73-year-old Vietnam veteran flying a single-engine plane headed to Aurora State Airport walked away after a fiery crash in rural Marion County Monday afternoon. The pilot, Eugene Mitchell from Portland, told Marion County deputies he experienced mechanical issues which led to the plane catching fire mid-flight. He made an emergency landing in a farm field in the area of Jordan Street Southeast and Howell Prairie Road and was able to walk away from the flaming wreckage with non-life-threatening injuries like Tom Cruise out of something like an action movie. I don't know. Police say Mitchell, who has flying experience dating back to his military service in Vietnam, was taken to a local hospital for his injuries where he was treated and released. Emergency services from Almsville Fire District, Marion County Fire District No. 1, and an ambulance from Santiam Hospital all responded to the scene to provide assistance. Governor Kate Brown signed Senate Bill 1044 into law this week. It sets a number of targets intended to make zero-emission vehicles the most dominant cars on the road within the next 20 years. Zero-emission vehicles, or ZEVs, have no tailpipe emissions and instead run on fuel sources like electricity or renewable hydrogen. One goal of the new bill is that 90% of the new vehicles sold in Oregon and 50% of all registered vehicles in Oregon would be ZEVs by 2035. With the passage of Senate Bill 1044, Oregon is helping lead the nation on how to transition to a cleaner, modern transportation system, Governor Brown said. When zero-emission vehicles are widely used and charging stations are easily acceptable to all, we can support economic development and the environment at the same time. The legislation also requires that the Oregon Department of Energy to monitor the ZEV adoption, and if the state is not on target, recommend strategies to the legislature to spur ZEV adoption. Potential strategies could include policies to adopt more infrastructure, such as electric vehicle charging and hydrogen fueling stations, and increase public awareness about ZEVs and their benefits. SB 1044 requires that all light-duty vehicles owned or leased by the state of Oregon be ZEVs by 2029, and gives schools the option to use an existing funding source to purchase electric buses and charging stations.
Lisa Nave was distraught. She had screwed up badly. It happened at a garage sale. Lisa, a Barlow resident, is newly married to Joshua Van Dyke. They're actually celebrating their first anniversary this month. They are kind of your standard newlyweds, and the way Lisa talks about Joshua is super cute. Several times she says what a good man he is, the kind of guy that will give you the shirt off his back. Anyway, the new blended family decided to put on a garage sale, not only because every Canby resident is legally required to hold a garage sale at least once a year, but also to downsize and simplify as they start their new lives together and give their kids a chance to get involved and work together. Joshua decided to sell some of his old CDs. For my younger listeners, CDs are these like small circles of plastic that ancient peoples once used to record and play music. Lisa goes into great detail here, but what you need to know is that the CDs were in this big binder that also held Joshua's prized movie collection. Here's the most important part. The CDs were for sale, the movies were not. The collection included not just some of Joshua's favorites, but old classics, war movies, and documentaries that would be difficult, if not impossible, to replace. Joshua had put a little note on the binder explaining what was for sale and what wasn't. But honestly, who reads that stuff at a garage sale? If I wanted to read something, I'd have gone to the library, am I right? Lisa didn't see the sign. She sold the binder to a guy who wanted to buy the entire collection for $20. It was one of those things that could happen to anyone. One tiny little miscommunication or misunderstanding leads to the next, which leads to the next, and before long they've coalesced into one huge mistake. For Lisa, it was pretty devastating. "My heart just dropped," she said. "I'll never forget the look of shock and disappointment in his face. Never want to see it again. Honestly, the feeling that I had basically given away something precious and wronged the one I love was one of the most horrible guilt feelings I've ever had. Overwhelming and with no way to make it right." She was desperate to fix her mistake. Problem was, she knew so little about the buyer. She didn't know his name. She didn't know where he lived or worked. His description: white, medium build, approximately in his 30s or 40s. It's not super helpful. She remembers thinking, is there any way in the world to find a stranger you only met once? She decided to try asking for help on the Canby Now Facebook group, which included the only unique tidbit she remembered, the offhand remark that he planned to spend his Saturday afternoon canning pickles. That's not a lot to go on. At least it wouldn't be in most communities, but this is Canby after all. Almost immediately, someone chimed in on Lisa's Facebook post. Dan Walker from Mark Road Farm is canning pickles today. Indeed, Dan Walker was canning pickles that day. In fact, he had been on his way to Costco to get supplies when the sign for Lisa's garage sale on Anderson Road caught his eye. Dan Walker was the mystery buyer. The two were able to connect through Facebook, and Dan assured Lisa that he would be happy to return the movies he'd accidentally been sold. She was at his door 20 minutes later.
She came in and we looked through the book, and I had already picked out the music CDs and I had them sitting there on the table. And I said, "Here, I picked out the music, and if you want to thumb through this and make sure everything is what you're after." She didn't even look through it. She tried to give me some money, and I said, no, you know, donate it to somebody if you really want to do something with that $50. I don't need it. You know, it was just an honest mistake.
Yeah.
So she gave me a big old hug and almost looked like she wanted to cry. And she grabbed the book and took off.
Afterward, Dan went back to Facebook and found Lisa's post, which had continued to collect likes and comments as the story evolved, from the initial panicked search for the mystery man to Dan's confirmation that he was the guy and planned to return the collection. The whole experience, including the kind words and support from the community, really warmed his heart, he said.
You know, I could have easily been a jerk about it and said, oh, I'm keeping them. I've bought them.
Right.
You know,
but that's finders keepers.
I mean, that's not me. And, you know, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I was glad to get them back to her. Going back and reading her postings, it looked like it was pretty important to her to get those DVDs back. You know, it warms your heart to see all these strangers post, you know, nice, kind words about me that, you know, they've never met me. We've probably crossed paths in local businesses, but
yeah,
you know, it was nice. You know.
Lisa was grateful for the experience as well. She said, the community came together and I realized what a blessing it is to be part of a small town where this type of miracle is even possible. Downtown LA or any other big city, never. The comments and responses have helped me to see the bigger picture that because this happened, our community has actually been strengthened and encouraged.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com. So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate and we saved him 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599, Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Richard Corey by Edwin Arlington Robinson. Whenever Richard Corey went downtown, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean favored and imperially slim. And he was always quietly arrayed, and he was always human when he talked. But still he fluttered pulses when he said, good morning, and he glittered when he walked. And he was rich, yes, richer than a king, and admirably schooled in every grace. In fine, we thought that he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. So on we worked and waited for the light and went without the meat and cursed the bread. And Richard Corey, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet in his head. All right, welcome back, listeners. I'm pleased to finally bring onto the Canby Now podcast for the first time the legend, Lisa Lear herself, originator of the Canby Now Facebook group, administrator of that group, and creator of the Canby Now name. Lisa, welcome onto the show.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good. good. So we are here at Waite Park enjoying a little bit of this music that you guys can probably hear in the background. And we're going to be talking about the Slice of Summer series. So it's appropriate to have some music here at Waite Park because that's what Slice of Summer is all about. But first of all, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your work you do with Can't Be Now, kind of where that came from. Can you tell me the origin story of you and the Can't Be Now group?
Well, actually, somebody else started it and left the group after a week or two.
Oh.
I'm not sure
why am I not surprised by this?
I'm not sure why. And I took it over. There was like less than 50 members.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So when did it start?
Years ago? Your birthday is actually the July 20th this year.
Okay.
It'll be 5 years old.
Wow. Oh, just 5 years? What? Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't realize it was that new.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were one of the founding members then. Did you come up with the name?
No, it was copied from Malala now.
Oh, okay. Cool. Interesting. So the person started the group. They left. You took it on. Why?
Because I'm a sucker. I just thought it'd be interesting.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't think it would morph to what it is. I figured a couple hundred members, maybe.
Yeah.
And we're pushing 19,500 now.
Yeah, it's huge. So when you say, like, what it is, what do you think of Can't Be Now being? Or how would you describe the group if somebody's like, what is it? What's it all about?
It's about Can Be and news, getting to know your neighbor, making friends, finding out about events.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like that kind of was the initial idea, but you just didn't expect it to get as big as it did?
Not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it has more people than the population of Canby.
Yeah, it does. Isn't that funny? Yeah, that's one reason that I thought that it was older, because I thought people would come and then moved away and then, you know, join the group and then, you know, but it sounds like that's not. It's
no.
Relatively new. So.
No. We do what surrounding members in.
Oh, okay. From other communities.
And then people who grew up here. Maybe we have a couple that live in a different country.
Yeah.
But they grew up here, so they want to keep in touch with what's going on. And I would say probably over half are from Gambie.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you become a dictator? No, I'm just kidding. How do you deal with that aspect as far as trying to moderate the discussions? No one likes to be moderated. No one likes to, have their comment changed or deleted or whatever. I mean, how do you approach that job and how do you deal with the flack that comes with it?
Not very easily.
Yeah.
I used to cry myself to sleep.
Sorry. It's tough. It's really, I bet it's stressful.
It can be really stressful at times.
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot better. I used to not be able to keep my mouth shut. And I would attack back when I was felt attacked.
You would clap back. That's what the kids call it.
Yep. And over the years, I've learned to just go with the flow. And I try my hardest not to delete things, but I do lock quite a few.
Yeah.
Just because I like people to be able to search for something that they're looking for.
Sure.
And a lot of times it's not the original post that's bad. It's the comments that get bad. Yeah. So I just lock. And I do delete, like, cussing and ones that are really bullying.
Yeah. One thing that I've found, because I've had some experiences where, you know, things get tense online, it's so easy to, like, get feelings miffed, you know, to get mad at people, to have these hurt feelings come from online interactions. And then there have been times that I've met these people in person and had good conversations, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, what is it about online communication that makes it hard to, or can tend to make that understanding and that just having a pleasant conversation more difficult, do you think?
It's just the hiding behind the screen, like people say. You say things that you would never say in person.
Yeah.
I don't know why people do it. I used to do it too. I've been in chat rooms for over 20 years.
That's the thing that's interesting about, because they're like, and a lot of times with message boards or chat rooms or whatever, there's that anonymity, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't say anything. Not necessarily the case on Canvey now. No. Like, this is people that you are possibly going to rub shoulders with, see at Thriftway or whatever. It's your face often and your name right there, you know, so you don't necessarily have that anonymity.
No, you don't. And that's what I try to tell members is, you know, you could be talking to your next door neighbor and not know it.
Yeah.
And how you feel when you meet in person.
Right.
So watch what you say and just be nice.
Yeah. So, just going on with that, like, have you met people that, like, you originally met from the group and, like, not necessarily in a negative way, but, like, you, you know, have formed, quote-unquote, real relationships, you know, or real friendships from people that you originally, you know, met through the group?
I actually have quite a few really good friends, and, in fact, my best friend, Stan, I met in the group.
Oh, really? Shout out to Stan.
Stan.
That's awesome.
We're really good friends, and we met in the group, and then there's probably four or five others that I'm really good friends with, and tons, probably 1,000 acquaintances. I don't go anywhere in town without someone yelling me.
I was gonna say, do you feel like a weird, like, kind of celebrity at times, or?
Yeah, I do. My kids absolutely hate going anywhere with me. Because I always stop to have to talk to somebody.
They can't get anything done without... Yeah, they can't walk 10 feet without someone who knows Lisa Lear.
Yep. And they know that they can't do no wrong.
Yeah.
Because it'll get back to me.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody knows who to call.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Cool. Well, so you are also in charge or one of the main organizers of the Slice of Summer concert series. I understand that's something that you sort of fell into as well, you know, just because it needed to be done, or?
Yes. In 2016, the Booster Club at Canby High stopped doing Slice of Summer because it wasn't profitable for them.
Yeah.
So 2017, there was no concerts, and people were getting on Canby Now asking, you know, where are the concerts at? Why don't we have them?
Do you know how long it had gone before that? How long the series had been going?
It started in 1985.
Oh, wow. A long time. Yeah. Longer than Canby Now Facebook page.
Oh, sure. Definitely. Way longer. It was started by somebody from the community school. Her name was Connie. I won't pronounce her last name because I'll mess it up.
Yeah.
But people wanted to... restart it, but no one would really step up.
Yeah, a lot of work, I bet.
It is a lot of work. Yeah. It is a lot of work. So I just said, okay, I'll see what it takes to restart it. Got a couple other people that were interested, and one of them is still with me. The other one is had to step down for personal reasons, but then we found a couple others, so we have a board of four.
Yeah.
And we work all year long. Yeah. We have meetings at least once a month all year long.
Yeah.
So as soon as the season's over in August, we'll take September off and then meet in October for start next year.
Yeah. Did it, I mean, so you did it that first year and you're still here. So it wasn't quite as horrible as you might have feared, or at least there was something rewarding about it?
Oh, it was rewarding. We had a good turnout, between 300 and 450, 500.
Between the three or per concert?
Per concert.
That's great.
Yeah, it was. It was a good turnout. It was a lot of work being at the park from 12 till 10 at night.
Yeah.
And all the setup and making sure nothing's forgotten. Lots of last minute details. Following the volunteers, which happens to be not all that hard.
Yeah. Tell us about this year's series.
This year, we are having Timothy James, who's a blues singer. He'll be playing next weekend on July 21st.
That's kicking things off, right?
Yes. Then our second concert will be Hayride. They are a cover band, and they play for people bands like Tim McGraw, Sarah Evans.
Yeah.
So awesome. They're pretty big in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah. They sing country.
Cool.
And then we have the Pacific Northwest famous group of Johnny Limbo and the Lugnuts, who have been around for 30, 40 years.
Sure, yeah.
And they sing like 60s classics.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting that concert to be really big.
Cool.
Another thing new that we have this year we're trying out is we will be serving beer and wine.
Oh, really? Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, we got our liquor permit.
Yeah.
And we're going to be trying it. People have been asking for years.
Yeah.
Except because the high school ran it, it wasn't...
And allowed.
It just didn't seem feasible.
Yeah.
Since the kids were doing most of the work.
Yeah.
So, we decided last year that we would wait, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. And now, I don't remember if you mentioned this, but now it's under the auspices of the Livability Coalition.
Canby Livability Coalition is our sponsor. Is our non-profit sponsor.
Yeah.
We're under the same...
501c3.
Yes, yeah. As them. We have one of our board members goes to their meetings.
Okay.
And is more involved with that aspect because they do want a personal knowledge of what we are doing and all that. So she's a liaison for that.
Yeah. But I would gather it's just about the... I know a few things that they do is they kind of encourage or organize community cleanups and park cleanups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They handle or look at all different aspects of livability in our community, and I would assume that that's kind of where the dovetail comes as far as with the Slices of Summer, is just having this wonderful, opportunity, free concert series for folks, the community, to come together, listen to music in one of our best parks here downtown. That's something that makes Canby more livable and a better place to be.
Right. And, they sponsor things like the Farmer's Market also.
Okay.
And then they built the bike hub out there on Holly and Territorial.
Cool. Yeah.
I do know those things.
Yeah. Yeah, so they do quite a bit of different stuff. Cool. So the Slice of Summer concert series, you mentioned the dates and the bands. Basically, you just show up, you bring your camp chairs. It's free to attend. I assume the beer and wine comes with...
purchase. And then there will be food vendors.
Food vendors as well.
For your purchase.
Okay.
We have tacos again, hot dogs. And something else that I have... they're meat pies.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I'm not sure what they are.
I wonder if it's the same group that's been doing those at the Canby Farmers Market. If
it's
it is.
Called Reha's?
Yes. Yeah, I think yes. So. Yeah, they are quite good. So.
That's where we found those at the Farmers Market.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, it's the same group.
Cool.
And we'll have the Canby Masonics. We'll be selling popcorn and cotton candy.
Yeah.
And then we'll have Kona Ice again.
Awesome. Cool. Tell me your favorite memory, if you can, related to the Canby Now Facebook group.
My favorite memory would have to be the dog. Famous Canby dog that we collected almost $10,000 for.
Okay.
He,
I don't know the story.
You don't know the story?
Tell it to me.
Oh, wow. Well,
I don't know everything, Lisa. Come on. I'm not like you.
There was a dog that was adopted, and he was abused by his previous owners.
Yeah.
And he escaped.
Yeah.
They tried and tried to get him to come to him.
Yeah.
He was in the woods somewhere, and they found him. And she would go out and sit there every day for hours in the snow. It was in the wintertime. Yeah.
What kind of dog?
It was a husky German Shepherd. She was just trying to gain his trust.
Yeah.
And then they finally were able to leash him and get him home. He escaped again a week later and got hit. And both of his back legs were shattered. And the surgery was $15,000.
Yeah.
And Finn, that's what his name. And the community he would update every day or every other day about what was going on, trying to catch him. It was a good month process.
Yeah.
So everybody had really fallen in love with the dog.
Yeah.
And the surgery was going to be $15,000, and everybody wanted to chip in. So I put together a GoFundMe, and the donations just soared. They gave him a check for about $9,600 made out to the vet.
Yeah.
And then he got a personal loan for the remainder. And the dog has not escaped since.
Wow.
He's healed.
Yeah.
And is very well loved. He has his own Facebook group.
Oh, he does?
He does. And every once in a while, he'll post pictures of him.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a great story.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's amazing to see the community come together for something like that. But I bet you see, maybe not to that level necessarily, but I think you see that quite a bit on the Cami Now group.
Yeah, they come together quite often. We also helped this one guy who works at Myers. He was about ready to lose his trailer if he didn't have a bunch of remodeling done.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law also works at Fred Meyer's and told me about him.
Yeah.
So I asked for volunteers, and we got volunteers. We got free supplies and redid almost his whole outside, painted his trailer, new deck.
Yeah.
There's been a few things like that, and then monetary donations from people.
Yeah.
Need a little bit of extra help with their rent or a bill, which yeah. isn't often, but people in Cami have a heart.
Yeah.
And as much as they fight on Cami Now,
yeah.
when there's a need, they come together usually.
And I think I agree with that. And I also think that something I notice about Cami people is there's a strong protective streak, I think, that they, you know, even though maybe there can be sometimes you know, arguments break out like they would in any family. But when the need comes or when someone comes after Cami, like, watch out, you know, because those wagons are going to get circled up and, you know.
Definitely. It's a pretty close-knit community, even though we're 18,000 people strong. It's still a tight community that look out after each other.
Well, my last question, Lisa, thank you so much for this. It's been nice to kind of get some insight on what it's like admitting the group and also obviously the information about the Slice of Summer series coming up. But I think anyone that spends any amount of time on the Cami Now group has this question. I've heard this question. It's something that I've been dying to know. Why can't Cami people keep track of their dogs? Like, what is that about?
It's actually not just a Cami issue. I belong to Oregon City and Malala, and there are times where I think we do have more. I don't know. Again, it's a trust issue that you're going to get your dog back.
Right, yeah.
That's a really good question. And I don't have the answer for it.
Okay, well, we'll have to keep looking for the answer, folks. I'm sorry. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
True story. When we first started the Cami Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers. Just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who would deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Cami or online at ps266swag.com.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships, whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology. Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities. For over a week, Canby residents wondered what animal was trapped on the steep, bramble and poison oak infested hillside behind their neighborhood and village on the locks. The whimper sounded like a cat or perhaps some type of wild animal. It wasn't until the eighth day that it started to sound like what it actually was, a dog, specifically a miniature Australian Shepherd mix that had somehow managed to get itself stuck approximately 75 feet down the dangerous and inaccessible hillside. Inaccessible, that is, to anyone but the brave volunteers with the Oregon Humane Society's Emergency Animal Rescue Team, also known as OSTAR. OSTAR members rappelled down the hill on Monday and retrieved the pup, uninjured and very happy to be rescued. The lead rescuer, Virginia Krakowiak, joined us on the line afterward to tell us about the experience. So thanks so much for talking to us. I was wondering if you could start just by telling us what happened.
Well, we got a call Sunday late morning about from one of the residents nearby in the mobile home park, mm-hmm. saying they'd heard some kind of animal in distress for at least almost a week. They thought it was a cat for the first several days. It's hard to distinguish animal calls for help sometimes, so I understand that. But
Yeah,
it, coyotes, things like that, we never know, right? And just the last few days, they started to think it was a dog, and they were right.
But they couldn't see it, correct?
Correct. Completely invisible. It was all they could only hear it. And we actually, when we responded the following morning, we had a drone that was donated to our team for all kinds of calls that would go on like this, and we couldn't see it with the drone. No one would have been able to see it. I could only see it once I was down, pressed against the brambles, and I caught a flash of its orange collar. I mean, it was a needle in a giant haystack.
Oh my gosh! So to set the scene a little bit, Virginia. What, like, where was the animal? What did you have to do to get to it?
Yeah, I mean, we had a pretty good idea with all the help of the neighbors. The concerned neighbors were awesome. They all kind of came out and pointed out where they had been hearing it, and mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in an open kind of, we'll call it a gully, even like that, there's echoes that happen. So mm-hmm. even when we arrived on scene that morning, it's almost like it knew we were there because it was loud and clear, and we could hear it, but it sounded like it was moving just because of the echoes. So we did our best to kind of take the middle of all those reports and picked a spot for a fall line to send someone down.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured we would just start looking and maybe get a better idea once we got down there. So poison oak, blackberries, it was about 5 feet high the whole time. So I tried to stay on top of it, but I was also cutting through it. And it was about 75 feet down that low to high angle incline I was able to finally see it. And it was in the picture. I don't know if you saw the news. The picture looks very bright and open, like it would be easy to see it. But I put my camera inside and use the flash. From the outside of it, you couldn't really see anything. So we're just so thankful that the dog was talking to us that morning so we could have any idea where to start. Otherwise, you know, I'm not sure if we would have found it.
Oh my gosh. And it was tangled up in blackberries, or was it caught in some type of line? It was kind of confusing. I heard different information about how it was trapped.
Yeah, so I had to cut back the blackberries, and there's some poison oak in there too. It was all just kind of a big mess to get to him.
Mm-hmm.
I got him to crawl to me a little bit, but in order to actually pull him out of there, I just had to cut things back.
Yeah.
He himself wasn't ensnared in anything at that point. He found a nice little spot that was just nice dirt, protected, and honestly protected from predators too. I think he picked just a perfect spot. if you're going to be somewhere for a week. My goodness, I don't know how he lasted that long. Bless his heart.
And how did he get down there? I mean, did he fall?
You know, we're not sure. We get a lot of calls like this, animals in confined spaces, and we get calls for like kittens and things like that in highly vegetated areas that crawl through.
Yeah.
But honestly, none of us really are sure how he made it in that far. It seems almost impossible. So I'm not sure if he got scared and ran in there and, because I couldn't see a scratch on him. And granted, maybe his thick fur helped him with that, but it's a mystery. We still are not sure.
Yeah, it was, you know, he was a small dog, but a long-haired dog, so hopefully that coat did give him some protection. It's believed that he had owners, right? He had a microchip, a collar. Have they been identified or found at this point? Do you know, Virginia?
So no microchip. The Clackamas County Dog Services were unable to find one, but he did have a collar, no tag or anything, but often tags, sometimes they get, you know, pulled off, especially when you're entangled in stuff. So he looks very well fed, and I think that helped him get through the week. I'm sure he lost some weight, but he was still nice and plump. So I think he's a well-loved dog, and there is someone who misses him. And if not, we know lots of nearby residents that want to call them there and want to go and adopt him.
Yeah.
He won the hearts of many. He had a big smile on it. I tried to put a muzzle on him. We always do that for safety.
Yeah.
He kept pulling it off. He just wanted to give everybody kisses. He was a very sweet boy that was ready to get out of there.
Yeah. No shortage of prospective homes then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think it'll be a happy ending even if no owner comes forward. So we're thankful for that.
That's good. When, you know, I just wonder, like, you and your team, when you're out there, like, kind of what's going through your head? Are you just, because, I mean, when you're describing it and when you see the pictures, like, to me, who never does anything like this, this is crazy. You know, I just, like, I'm sorry, pup, you're on your own, you know, is my thought. Like, do you guys, when you're out there, you're just like, this is crazy? Or, you know, does that ever enter your mind? Or are you just so focused on the task at hand that you're like, we're going to get this done?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are safety first. We train all year long. We have monthly trainings, so we go out and do mock rescues. And we have multiple safety checks. Even though there was just four of us there, we still, I trust those ropes. I know that the people that tied those knots know how to tie knots. We all have the training. And so I'm not nervous when I'm going over a cliff, because I know everyone up there had the same training I had. And usually if we're doing a high angle rope rescue, I'm on two ropes. We have extra, even more safety checks. So we have constant training. And even though we're all volunteers and have full-time jobs, we still, we take this very seriously. And so we think it's crazy when people go down without the ropes, you know, because they can get hurt. So we're happy to go in. You know, we're doing it the easy way, honestly.
Do you often do climbs like this? I mean, you know, when I think of animals in need of rescue, like you described, you know, I'm normally thinking like a cat stuck in a tree, but also like, you know, an animal stuck in a confined place, like they're, you know, under some vehicle or you're, you know, something like that. I don't normally think of like necessarily rappelling down a cliff or whatnot, but it sounds like this is not necessarily, you know, out of the norm for you.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. What OSTAR is really known for is dogs off cliff, and it's unfortunate, but you know, we live in a very beautiful area with a lot of big cliffs and big places to fall, and it happens. And so that's what we're doing mostly when we're training at mock rescues, is for those high angle rescues. And sometimes they end up being recoveries, but still being able to return an animal to their owner is something that's very meaningful, and that's something that we would want if we were in the same scenario. So we take every mission case by case, whether we're going to respond, whether it's safe for us to respond. But you know, OSTAR's history. I've only been with them 3 years, but they've had several rescues of dogs that have gone over cliffs. So that's where we really shine, and those are the most difficult, but that's what we get when we get called for those.
Mm-hmm.
That's when all the bells go off and people, the whole team tries to get there, because that's when we need as many bodies as possible.
And OSTAR, it's Oregon Humane Society Technical Animal Rescue, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Tell us just a little bit about, obviously we've been talking about some of your work, but kind of the basics of what you do. Obviously you're superheroes that rescue animals, or...
I don't love superheroes. I think we're all animal lovers that that somehow, you know, we saw a need, or we talked to someone, it's word of mouth. That's why we're really happy that this story, it helps us by, you know, we're always recruiting. We're looking for people to join the team. We survive off donations only. So we have an Amazon wish list, and then all of our equipment, every piece of gear comes from donation. And it's all gear that keeps us safer and helps us save lives. So we're a very small part of a huge web of volunteers at the Oregon Humane Society. Mm. I think there's over 2,000 volunteers at OHS, and we're just a very small part of that. We get to do the fun things, right? We get the spotlight because these are really awesome stories, and we get to save a life. But really, the Humane Society saves so many lives every single day with all their different programs. So we just we're trying to get more people. The more, the merrier. So I hope this brings about some interest and recruitment. And we train everyone. Even if you come in with zero technical rescue, rope rescue training, we after an interview and a process, we provide the training for our volunteers. So it's in-house. There's no requirement to be a superstar before you apply.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that it's, you know, just seeing the pictures, like I said, and I know that you guys approach it from a very safe way. You have all the training and everything, so obviously you have much more to go on than I do, looking at a cliff like that and just being like, nope, you know. But but still, I think that it's, you know, you can't call it anything but courageous, and you know, obviously appreciate you guys coming to our area and saving this dog. And you know, like you said, either the owners will be found or there will be a number of good homes for him. So definitely looks like a happy ending is in store. Is there anything that you would add, Virginia, that we didn't talk about, just kind of putting a bow on this story?
Again, we're just thankful that we were called, you know, and that he hung on that long. And we're thankful for, we know everyone's an animal lover. As I say this, my two dogs are a little running out. So we are thankful for the recognition and people being so supportive of the team, and so thank you for getting in touch with us. We're always happy when it's a feel good story. So
absolutely.
That's really all I have.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Virginia. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day. Nice to talk to you.
You too. You as well.
Okay. Bye bye.
Can Be Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily. Find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. The decision to create the Canby Union High School District brought together a diverse patchwork of 16 distinct districts under one roof. They had names like Yost Corner, Mark's Prairie, Union Hill, Meridian, Lone Elder, Mundorf, Paradise Corner. Organizers felt it was better to consolidate resources in a regional collector school where class sizes would top 120 than 16 much smaller and underfunded high schools scattered across the county, with graduating classes consisting of as few as a single student. I don't know about that. With a class that size, even I might have had a good shot at being named most likely to succeed. Anyway, The decision to unify was made unanimously by representatives of all 16 districts at a meeting at the Methodist Episcopal Church. A new school was needed. Classes were originally staged at the former Riverside School building that Canby had acquired and relocated to the corner of what is now Waite Park, but the new Union District needed some time to prep for a capital campaign. By 1927, they were ready. They just needed the land. The original location was to be in Oakley Hill, but an alternative was made possible when New Era farmer George Henry Brown, the so-called Potato King of Clackamas County, donated 30 acres of his family's land to further education in Canby. In an abundance of caution, the new district asked voters to choose between the Brown parcel or Oakley Hill, and they picked the former by a comfortable margin. Almost 97% of the 464 ballots cast sided with the Potato King. It was the largest turnout at an election in Canby's history and easily the most decisive, and plans for a sparkling new high school building were soon underway. It would be L-shaped, quite stately looking if I do say so myself, and state-of-the-art in all respects. It was made of reinforced concrete with 8 classrooms, a study hall, a library, administrative offices, special vocation classrooms for the teaching of such subjects as cooking and sewing, a cafeteria, a science laboratory, and a farm shop. I mean, this is Canby after all. The gymnasium was a roomy 3,600 square feet, boasting showers and dressing rooms for boys and girls, and was declared by the Canby Herald to, quote, furnish ample facilities for all gymnastic and athletic work. The dean of Oregon State University spoke at the February 3, 1928 dedication ceremony, while the Willamette University Club provided music. The school housed 150 students that first year. It lasted about a month before it was the victim of its first prank. Unknown parties, described by the Herald as amateur burglars, what do they know about burgling anyway, broke into the high school, stole keys from the principal's desk, and proceeded to ransack the building. The exact same prank, down to the keys being in the same location, was perpetrated 9 months later in December 1928. The miscreants have not yet been apprehended, although suspicion still rests upon some local parties, a reporter noted. The crown jewel of the facility was a 600-seat auditorium, which would later seat 300 more with the addition of a balcony. It soon became a meeting place not only for students, but the entire town. One early meeting hosted a group of concerned cattlemen who gathered to plot against their bitter enemy. If you guess sheep ranchers, a la the Sheep Shooters War we told you about a few episodes back, try again. It was actually oleo, which is another word for margarine, I think. Sponsored by the Oregon Jersey Cattle Club, the meeting was, quote, an attempt to show the voters how the oleo manufacturers are a detriment to the dairymen, the largest industry in Oregon. It is expected that a musical program and several vocal numbers will follow the business part of the meeting. Oh, songs about milk. That's fun. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard and their life is better than yours. Maybe not that one. But the auditorium was a cultural center, even serving as a movie theater in the 1920s. There were silent films in those days, but included piano accompaniments and live stunts, all of which were performed by the students. The students raised the money to cover the costs as well. They even bought the piano. One screening was of the 1922 film, The Cradle Buster, a 5-reeler that one reviewer said had about enough good content for 3 reels. Yeah, everybody's a critic. The auditorium was a site of more somber meetings as well. Hundreds of residents gathered there in the wake of the 1929 stock market crash. Though far removed from the skyscrapers of Wall Street, the collapse of the New York Stock Exchange and the subsequent Great Depression touched virtually everyone in the country. Areas that relied heavily on farm income, like Canby, were particularly hard hit. Another meeting was held at the Canby Auditorium in 1932 to discuss how to save Canby's banking industry. It was not just talk either. In those years, actionable plans were put into place by the school and faculty to help support the unemployed members of the Canby community. Though the sums raised were meager, often in the $100 range, they were no doubt a great comfort to those who had nothing. Since jobs were even more in demand than money, faculty offered employment of various kinds to men in need of work, in cooperation with the local committee for the relief of unemployment. We have many more colorful stories to tell you from the history of the Canby School District, but it'll have to wait till next time on Canby Then. Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Lisa Lear. Thanks to all of the fun times and for letting us stick a microphone in your face all weekend. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
In our next episode, Nancy Reagan, Arun Gandhi, Minnie Jean Brown, Jody Williams, Madame Lee Hee Ho, Frederick de Klerk, Holocaust survivor, Alter Wiener. They will not be guests on our next show, but our guest has met all of them, and he brought all of them to Canby to speak to his students over the years. It's Tony Crawford, who helped open the world to a generation of Canby students during his 35-year career at the Canby School District. He tells us about how he did it and his next adventure.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanbyNow. Or to learn how you can start supporting our show and gain access to exclusive content through Patreon, visit CanbyNowPod.com/plus.